Thank you for joining me. I'm your host, Jason Coleman, and you are listening to Things That Make You Go, Book Review Podcast. And welcome to another episode of Things That Make You Go, Book Review Podcast. I am your one-man book club, Jason Coleman. Thank you so much for joining me for another episode. So nice to talk to you guys again. Today's episode, we are going to be discussing the book Ignore It, How Selectively Looking the Other Way Can Decrease Behavioral Problems and Increase Parenting Satisfaction by Catherine Perlman. I think this book for me was pretty much a no-brainer because I've always been fascinated by the concept of if you ignore people, what sort of a response will you be given? And if you listen to any of my podcasts, you probably see a common theme of books about Buddhism and Stoicism and meditation and mental clarity and those kind of things. And I think that in order to achieve any sort of mental stability, on some level, you have to ignore a lot of the distractions that are out there for you. And speaking on a personal level, working as a school teacher, especially in middle school, which is what I teach, if you don't learn to ignore a lot of behaviors, you're just not going to make it very long in the career. So I've always been fascinated by the whole concept of what sort of results can you achieve when you try to ignore undesirable behavior. And I should probably tell you that coming into the book, I already knew that on some level, behaving badly or inappropriately can be reinforced if you don't ignore things. But I was a bit cautious because I've always believed that if you ignore too much, then you are going to give, you know, children license to do almost whatever they want. They're going to almost get the idea in their heads that they don't have any rules, and so therefore they can act any way they want. Now, granted, this varies wildly from child to child. Some kids, they just don't really have much of a desire to break the rules. And so, you know, you don't have to implement a whole lot of behavior strategies. Other kids, you know, natural consequences and lectures, it doesn't work for them. The only thing that really works is punishment. So I don't know. This is a very tricky thing. And the author is quick. And in her defense, she does point out in the first chapter that this strategy is not designed for students who have severe mental deficiencies, mental disorders. They're, you know, these are the sort of kids that need to be under the care of a psychiatrist. Students who engage in, and I'll talk a little bit more about this later, self-inflicting harmful behavior are not good candidates for this program. Students who, you know, seem to have a bit of an antisocial personality disorder, like none, that's not going to work. I think this is just kind of more for your run-of-the-mill kid who tends to have a bad attitude, throw tantrums, get angry, and demand their parents' attention at all times. You know, you're just your standard run-of-the-mill kid, I think. Okay, and that's really what the author was saying too. So this is what the author starts off by talking about. She says that humans are designed to get responses from others, meaning that babies will cry because they haven't acquired language skills yet. And so when they need attention, they're hungry, they're tired, their diaper needs changing, they're uncomfortable, whatever the case is. Since they can't talk, the only thing that they can do is cry. And that will elicit a response immediately from a parent. And it works really well because the parent can communicate on some level with the baby even before the baby knows how to talk. It's the same with facial expressions and nonverbal body language, you know, so on and so forth. So they said that the problem, though, is that as the kids get older, they begin to understand that they don't necessarily need to be in distress in order to get attention from their parents, okay? What they can do is they can elicit these responses mostly just because they want their parents' attention, not necessarily because it's all that necessary. And you can make the logical inference that over time, this can really spiral out of control. So it's a bit difficult because on some level, we're not really designed to ignore children, okay? We're evolutionarily designed not to ignore them. So in order to do that, it takes some practice. It almost becomes counterintuitive. And there's a whole technique and strategy that the author talks about, and I'll go into that momentarily. But first of all, the author draws a very clear distinction between what can be ignored and what cannot be ignored. And the things that can be ignored are basically things that just involve mostly verbal outbursts, maybe a little bit of destruction as long as it's not too bad, throwing things across the room as long as they're not aiming it at anybody, as long as the items are just their own personal property, but mostly behaviors such as being silly, making, you know, loud tantrums, inappropriate language, all of those things can be ignored. And they were saying that the sort of behaviors that cannot be ignored are things that are behaviors that are not designed to get attention. And this would be things like overeating, okay? Because in that situation, the person is not trying to necessarily get attention from other people. They have an addiction problem, and so they're really trying to feed their own addiction. The same with video games. The same with self-injuring as well. Not actually, I think with self-injuring, there probably is an attention component, but you can't really ignore that, because if you do, the kid could they're not worldly people. They don't have a lot of life experience. They're unaware of how much damage they could be doing to themselves, and so that cannot be ignored. I can remember. There was a student I had a while back, and the thing about the student was she would she has some mental challenges, and she was under the care of a physician too, but she would have these tantrums, and then she would run out of the classroom and just try to start sprinting off the campus. And they had an aide to work with her, because this was a fairly common thing. This would happen with her somewhat regularly. And I was talking with her assistant one time, and I said, why is it that you're chasing her down? I mean, where is she going to go? And they were saying that it's not really rational what she's doing. And so it's not necessarily that she could go or get anywhere. They were just concerned that she might run into the streets and get hit by a car or something of that nature. So in those situations, when somebody's personal or physical health is at stake, you can't just allow them to, you can't just ignore those kind of behaviors. So the whole term ignore, and I'm sure the author was having trouble with this word too, is a bit of a misnomer. And I'll talk a little bit about the techniques here. Now, what they're saying is that when you ignore, what we're saying here is that you are pretending that the actions are not taking place. Okay. And on some level, it's a bit of a what's that called, a paradox or a logical contradiction, where you're on one level, if you're ignoring, that means that you're not hearing something, but you're pretending it's not happening. But if you're making a conscious effort to pretend that something's not happening, it almost defeats the purpose in some ways. So she says that when you ignore, you're giving the person the impression that you're not involved, emotionally invested, or going to respond to what they're doing. But at the same time, you're actually listening very closely. And she says, here's the key to the program. It's what's called re-engagement. And she goes into this long discussion about positive reinforcement and negative reinforcement. I'm not going to get into all that. That's highly theoretical. You can look it up on Wikipedia if you want. But what she's saying is basically, in a nutshell, is that what you do is once the child is doing something that's undesirable to get your attention, screaming across the room, having a tantrum, using inappropriate language, you do not engage any of that. Now, but you're listening very carefully. Okay, you're only giving them the impression that you're not interested in what they're doing. Now, as soon as their behaviors transition back into something that is desirable, let's say talking with a calm voice, or they become quiet again, you immediately re-engage them with a positive attitude and try to and then you explain to them at that moment what it is that they want. So you're not giving the bad you're not responding to the bad behavior. You're responding to the good behavior. And she goes into a whole diatribe of information about B.F. Skinner, the behaviorist, Glasser. I mean, I learned about all these people myself in class. You know, when I was taking my own teacher education courses in behaviorism and so on and so forth. So I know a little bit about this, but I think for other people, it might be helpful to read a little bit about some of these behaviorists, especially in the 1950s and 1960s, because this is a lot of child psychology that we have today is built off of their work. And so what the general overview is that if you engage somebody when they're doing something positive, it's going to reinforce into their mind that doing something positive is going to elicit the response that they want from their parents, which is attention. And doing what they don't want, what the parents do not want, acting in an inappropriate way, will not grant them the attention that they're seeking. Okay. And over time, and she said, this is an important point too. She said that very often, a lot of people give up on the program because they're not only do they not see a change in behavior with their kids, but the situation in many ways actually gets worse. And this is common. The author says that what's happening here is that the student is trying to negotiate, basically. What they're trying to do is they're trying to go so crazy to put it out of the parent's mind that this program is going to work. And even that, on some level, shows that the program is working because the child is backing down from they have to escalate where they were, which shows that they have to change tactics the same way that the parent is changing tactics, which shows that the program is probably working if there is an escalation in the beginning. So somebody might say, well, what if my child hurls, you know, a toy across the room and it breaks and whatever the case is. And the author says that this is fairly common too. And she said, use the exact same program. What you do is you ignore the behavior. You ignore that particular behavior. You don't mention it. You don't give any kind of attention to it. And then once you are re-engaging, once the child is behaving appropriately again, then at that point you say something to the effect of, okay, you threw that across the room and that's not right. Here's a trash bag. Go clean up your mess. Okay. So you wait for the right moment. I know people are not animals, but if you watch Caesar Milan in The Dog Whisperer, he uses a lot of these similar techniques where what he does is when a dog is having a tantrum or flipping out or just being very aggressive, he'll just restrain the animal until the animal finally calms down. And once because the thing is that when your brain becomes angry or upset or frustrated, you trigger an adrenaline, a source of adrenaline in your brain, kind of like a fight or flight reflex that's built into our evolutionary history. And so what's happening here is that you have this burst of energy that you can then use to defend yourself, attack somebody. But the thing is that normally after this happens, you go through a period of recovery and exhaustion. So in other words, playing the ignore game, time is on your side, okay? The child, the animal, the whatever, they will not be able to keep up that high level of energy indefinitely, okay? At some point, your body is going to become fatigued and exhausted from trying to keep up this mental aggressive tirade. So if you can just wait them out, you know, time is on your side. And I think that's another important point too, is that they can only keep themselves in a state of high energy anger for so long. You can keep yourself in a period of calm indifference indefinitely. So that's another thing to consider as well. Now, I could go on and talk. You can tell that I've done a lot of thinking about this. But I do want to talk really quickly about my own personal experience with ignore it, because this is one thing I don't agree with what the instructor or what the author was saying, is that ignore it could work in the classroom situation too. She actually dedicates a whole chapter to this. And I will tell you right now that she gives a few caveats, and those caveats are big caveats. Okay. This is what the author says. The author says, you can use ignore it in the classroom for inappropriate behavior. But then she gives a disclaimer. She says, so long as the student isn't able to get attention from their peers. However, if when they make jokes or when they have loud outbursts, if the other peers are laughing at them or high-fiving them, then the program won't work because they're going to get the reinforcement from their peers that they're seeking. And what I'm saying is that you cannot control a whole classroom's response. If a student is good at eliciting a reaction from their peers, you can't punish everybody for laughing at their jokes. I mean, you can redirect them, you can talk to them, but then you're going to get into some tricky waters too, because if you have the student who's misbehaving in the classroom while you're simultaneously trying to lecture the students about ignoring that student, you're in some ways giving the student even more attention than they could have hoped for. Also, a lot of students who are problems in the class, they tend to be bullies a lot of the time as well. And a lot of kids feel that they have to reciprocate. They have to give the bullying student that reaction, because if they don't, they might actually get targeted by that kid. And I've seen that happen many times. So, I mean, I'm not saying that none of this program will work in the classroom. I personally do a great bit of ignoring, but I will say that if a younger teacher is coming into the classroom and they think that they'll be able to use this ignore it program, and they're noticing that the kid is getting positive reinforcement from their peers constantly, then they're never going to be able to redirect that behavior. I think at that point, if the kid is getting just way too much positive reinforcement from the students, you have to resort to punishment. You have to resort to bringing in outside resources. It just will not stop. Okay, I mean, we're talking very often about students who don't do very well academically, so their only source of entertainment in the class is misbehaving. That's really the only way they can feel good about themselves. They can't feel good about themselves academically. They're too far behind. So just keep that in mind. If you are thinking about trying to implement this program in a classroom, it's a lot more complicated. It works a lot better when you have one or two children to deal with, because in that situation, you can focus all of your energies on the one or two kids. Whereas, you know, in a classroom, you have 30 plus students all at the same time. It's a dynamic situation, which is another thing too that I wanted to point up in the whole concept of becoming overwhelmed by something. And that's why the author is saying that you shouldn't really try to, I mean, if your child is displaying 10, 15 inappropriate behaviors, then you shouldn't try to correct all of them at once. Focus on one thing at a time. Focus on getting them to bed on time, or focus on getting them dressed for school on time. You know, and then what you can do is over time, you can begin to build on the victories that you've previously had. And speaking of victories, and this is important, this is the one thing that I do think that the author made a very good point. And if you're ever going to implement any new program at home, in the classroom, whatever the case is, she says you have to have some sort of a data collection system, okay? And she said that a lot of times you can actually stave off inappropriate or undesirable behaviors if you know what the kid's triggers are. Like, for example, I have a particular student who is a much more severe behavior problem on Mondays than they are any other day of the week. And the reason is pretty obvious to me. They're split between two parents, and so they visit one of their parents during the weekend. Then they have to come home on Sunday night. They're normally tired. They're thrown into a new routine, and it's pretty exhausting. So, knowing this ahead of time, I can hedge against these things. Okay, I can make sure that I'm giving that student maybe a job for the day, maybe passing out papers. Maybe I encourage their aide to, have them take a break at some point during that day. Maybe I give them a little bit of extra positive reinforcement when they walk through the door. And so you're able to head off some of the undesirable behaviors, but I wouldn't know that unless I was keeping some sort of a log with when I was seeing the behaviors occurring the most often. And I will say, you know, a lot of times when a kid is misbehaving, acting inappropriately, we tend to hold on to these things. Humans are very, very, to our own detriment a lot of times, reflective, perseverating, I forget what the word is, but it's where you cannot stop harping and thinking about a certain action that took place. You keep replaying it in your mind. You keep trying to imagine alternate scenarios. And you got to be careful of that, because if your child did something, you know, particularly heinous, you know, saying they hate you and that you're ugly and you wish that you were never born, and the parent starts, you know, trying to reflect, you know, oh my God, where did I go wrong in their parenting? What did I do? What did I say? And sometimes you can think that, well, the behaviors aren't really improving at all because you're focused so much time reflecting on the inappropriate behavior. But if you use some sort of a log sheet, if you use some sort of data collection, then what you might find is that maybe if the child was having 5 to 6 outbursts a day, maybe that particular day they only had 1 or 2 outbursts, which actually should be cause for celebration on some level. Because what you're doing is you're seeing an improvement in the behavior, but because you are focusing so much on how much you were offended, you're not really seeing the gains of everything else that's been going on. Last thing I'm going to talk about, because I know this is running a little long here, is, you know, there's a huge controversy, especially in education, and I know in parenting as well, about the whole concept of rewards, where if you give, you know, a reward, let's say you buy a kid some ice cream for getting an A on a test, at some point the reward system is going to become so exhaustive, so expensive, and that the kids aren't really going to feel like they're getting any personal satisfaction. It's not going to be an intrinsic reward, as the theorists like to say. And therefore, it just won't work, that the most meaningful rewards are the intrinsic rewards, when you feel a sense of accomplishment. Excuse me. And I personally do agree with that. I do agree that those feelings of intrinsic rewards are certainly more powerful than the extrinsic rewards, but I don't think the extrinsic rewards are meaningless. And I think in a lot of ways, they're really necessary. I mean, I have to use extrinsic rewards for myself. What I do is I have a hard time exercising. I don't like to exercise. I have a hard time getting myself on a reading routine. I don't necessarily like to do that. I would much rather watch Netflix. I would much rather play video games, okay? So what I have to do is I have to give myself rewards. I keep like little tracking sheets. If I work out for 3 days in a row, I treat myself to Pinkberry. Or if I read consistently for 2 weeks, then I buy myself some new book that I really wanted. I'm 41 years old. I have a doctoral degree. And even I have to use these extrinsic rewards. The intrinsic rewards aren't even enough for me. As a matter of fact, I give myself rewards when I'm able to get my podcast out on time. So to just say that these kids who have very little worldly experience, that they're going to be somehow so mentally sophisticated that external rewards aren't going to be necessary, I just don't think that that's realistic. Maybe for some kids, I have seen that there are ultra mature kids that, you know, they're just not really motivated by material things too much, but they're very, very heavily in the minority. That's a rare case. I think much more likely, you know, rewards can be a powerful thing, but the author says you got to be strategic about it. You have to make sure that, you know, if a desired behavior, they're starting to display it, that you make the rewards less frequent. Then eventually you have like one big reward and then you discontinue the reward altogether, focus on something else. So you have to be strategic with this. But I mean, I was glad to see that after rewards had fallen out of favor for a long time, they're starting to make a comeback again. And even I've had to kind of do some rethinking about how I feel about extrinsic rewards also. Okay. All right. As you can see, I can talk about this literally all day, but, you know, I want to go ahead and wrap this up. I want this to be a somewhat concise book discussion of the book. But if you are more interested in using the technique, which can be a very powerful technique, and I think the author gives it in a very user-friendly way, then I absolutely recommend ignore it, how selectively looking the other way can decrease Behavioral Problems and Increased Parenting Satisfaction by Catherine Perlman. We are at the end of the podcast. I do not know what I'm going to be reviewing next, but I will try to have my podcast out to you again in 2 weeks. Thank you if you stayed all the way to the end. I really enjoy it. I appreciate the support, and I will talk with you guys very soon. And until then, happy reading.